Hello and welcome to another Future of Real Estate podcast with me, Damien Wild. Sorry there's been a gap between episodes. Like everyone else, we've been coming to terms with an immediate future for real estate that looks very different to the one we were envisaging when we were last on air. But we're back with a good one, and one that addresses the way we will work, live, and especially play in the months and perhaps years ahead. COVID-19 has forced us to question and reevaluate so much. In real estate, much of the debate has centered on the future of the office and whether working from remote locations rather than central hubs is the way forward as well as it is the present. Lockdown has made us more reliant on online shopping than ever and has proven the resilience of the infrastructure that has built up there in recent years. But it is leisure that has been impacted perhaps hardest. There are few plan Bs when it comes to staying in a hotel or going out for a drink. One business that has sought to get on the front foot in its response is BrewDog. As a brewery and a bar operator, it has been able to pivot part of its business just as much as some of it has dried up. It's always a brand to listen to. Whether you enjoy its products, and if you don't, beers called Punk, Elvis Juice and Nanny State should offer an indication of its philosophy, or just follow its irreverent social media activity. A new beer, Barnard Castle Eye Test, is now in production after demand on Twitter soared. I caught up with Chief Operating Officer David McDowell, who talked about the threats to the hospitality industry in a reassuringly measured way about the need for landlords to engage supportively with tenants if both parties are to survive.
David, thank you very much for joining us today. I've been following your social media channels keenly and more keenly recently, and you've been talking about how you might reopen your bars, and I'll come along to those plans in a moment. But first of all, this must have been an extraordinarily difficult period. Leisure operators have been hit as hard as anyone in the business community during this crisis. As a business that's split between brewing and pubs, how have you been affected and how have you managed?
Well, listen, you're right. It's been a heck of a challenge for a number, vast number of sectors, but you know, hospitality and leisure has certainly been hit hard. And for us, we lost 70% of our revenue overnight. And as you quite rightly pointed out, because we are a brewer and a pub company, then there's a little bit of diversity there, which has helped us. And I know the vast majority of pub, restaurant, hospitality operators went from lost 100% of their revenue overnight, which is incredibly frightening. We luckily have 30% or so of our business that is based on grocery, so UK, European and US grocery and supermarket sales. As you can imagine, that's gone well, and that channel has been in a little bit of growth, which has been great. And we've had to react and pivot to a certain extent, because the way that consumers behave when they're visiting a supermarket is clearly very different to the way that they behaved a few months back. More specifically for us, that means that people are going once a week and they're picking up a bigger pack format of beer. So we had to quickly react to that. But that's been good. We have a...
And sales shop. There have risen, just to be clear.
Yeah. I mean, I think that... There's a lot of discussion in the media around the fact that alcohol sales have grown during the crisis, and that's clearly not the case. Blended alcohol sales across the on-premise and the off-premise have fallen, but it's clear, and we realised early on that more people were going to buy beer in a supermarket than they would beforehand. So we've managed to grow share, which has been good, and the team have done an extraordinary job of that. And that and our e-commerce channel have been the two channels that have effectively kept the business afloat. Because at the other side of that, all of our on-premise distribution disappeared, 102 pubs pretty much all closed, and our international business, as different countries went into lockdown, we export to 63 different countries. So our international business is only now starting to gather some momentum again. So yeah, overnight, 70% of our revenue gone, the business plan for the year in the bin, and all of a sudden we realized that we had two real key primary areas of focus and priorities. And those were, one, to try and give this business the best chance of surviving as possible. And secondly, whilst doing that, to protect as many livelihoods amongst our 2,000 team members as we possibly could.
Okay, and you know, I've seen that as directors, like many directors, you've made some sacrifices yourself, but you have been able to keep that team together and the staff on board, have you?
Yeah, we have, and you know, 98% of our pubs and retail team went on to the government furlough scheme or equivalent in other countries, and that has been a lifeline which allowed us to do that. So I think that's been a very positive intervention, or one of the positive interventions by government. So we managed to keep the team together via that. And as you said earlier, we're now trying to plan slightly further ahead in terms of what reopening hospitality looks like. But at the time, that, you know, 9-10 weeks ago, we were reacting hourly to the situation, to what was happening in business, to how customers were reacting, to how consumers were reacting, and to what interventions governments were making. So we were really in the weeds and in the detail, trying to make sure that we gave this organisation a good chance to navigate some very choppy waters.
And you've been quite complimentary of some government steps along the way, but I see that you're very much supporting and advocating a call for a national timeout to support tenants and landlords. What further support would you like to see, first from government, then I'd like to come on to landlords?
Well, listen, I think that there's probably three main areas of focus for me where I think we need intervention. So first and foremost, the hospitality and leisure sector are clearly going to be the last or one of the last to be able to ramp up to anywhere near the revenue that they were experiencing pre-COVID. So I think that, and I'm sure we'll hear much more about this in the days ahead, we need a very fair and equitable tapering off of the government furlough scheme to allow us to get people back to work steadily and to protect as many jobs as we can during the process of reopening hospitality. So that's number one. Secondly, I think that we strongly feel that in terms of rent and the negotiations and discussions between tenants and landlords, then there just has to be a pragmatic conversation where the key protagonists, so tenant, landlord, lender, government intervention if required, sit round the table and find a way to share the pain of this period. Otherwise, landlords are going to find themselves with a lot of empty property at the other side of this, and we're going to risk millions of hospitality and retail jobs.
So has that happened yet?
No, it hasn't happened.
Around the table and having those constructive conversations?
Absolutely not. And I think in the vast majority of cases, landlords are either waiting to see how the situation pans out. In the worst case scenario, some landlords are not opening any dialogue whatsoever. And all that we're asking is for open dialogue to try and find solutions. And I would say we've probably got that by from 10% maximum of our UK landlords at the moment.
So 90% aren't willing to talk?
90% aren't willing to engage in any dialogue about supporting the business.
Okay, and sorry, you were going to make a third point there.
Third point for me is that we have fundamentally crippled, and some of this for good reason, consumer confidence in going out to a pub or a restaurant or a shop. And there has to be an aggressive consumer confidence campaign on the other side of this, supported by a stimulus package, supported by a reduction in VAT for hospitality and leisure for a period of time, to allow customers the opportunity to feel comfortable and safe getting back out into hospitality and retail. And we have our bit to play in that as well by openly and transparently communicating the measures that we're putting in place to make sure consumers do feel safe as well. So those are probably my three main areas that I think we have a heck of a lot of work to do.
And in that last area, you've talked about a reduction in VAT as necessary.
Absolutely, for a number of reasons. First and foremost, we have got to, you know, landlords aren't going to get paid rent, staff aren't going to get paid wages unless we get hospitality to a level where it's, I mean, we don't make any profit from our locations until we're 80% of capacity that we were at before. So there's a long way to go to get that. We need consumers to come back in order to get to that point. And also, people are quite rightly feeling the pinch in their own pockets. So we need to find a way to encourage people to come back out and spend some money, benefit from slightly reduced consumer pricing in retail and hospitality in order that they do come and spend some of their very hard-earned cash that they're taking even more care with than ever before.
Okay. And government rhetoric has been very much on the side of the tenant rather than the landlord throughout. And perhaps pre this crisis, some landlords would say, and I know some landlords would say, that they feel that they always bear the financial burden disproportionately. Do you have any sympathy with that view?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that we are, what we're not seeing is that we don't want to find a fair and equitable solution to how we get through an unprecedented period. All we're seeing is there needs to be dialogue which says there's pain for the operator, and it's clear that that's happening. There's pain for the landlord, so how do we find a way to deal with that in a fair and equitable way? And how? And the premise of the campaign that we've been supporting is also that it's crucial that there is also support for landlords and not just tenants in terms of how they are able to take a holiday from any loan repayments for that particular property during the period that they're having to support retail. So we certainly have sympathy for that, 100% do. But we think that that could be resolved by fair, equitable, open, transparent dialogue. And we are in the main, unfortunately, still struggling with that at the moment.
Okay, well, the most important thing for landlord, tenants, government, society alike is that the economy restarts and this sector restarts. And you've talked about a 10-point plan for reopening. How would that work?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, I think that we were in a place as a sector where we are quite rightly and have been quite rightly very, very focused on the here and now, the frightening and crippling challenges that some aspects of hospitality face, and trying to get really, you know, under the bonnet of how we resolve those. We felt a few weeks back that it was also very important for us to start to think about how hospitality might gradually reopen and start to talk very openly with consumers and customers and landlords and everyone about how we were going to approach that. We realized that, and we're still in this position incidentally, there aren't any government guidelines as to how hospitality is going to reopen. But we also realized that if we were going to wait for someone to hand us a manual, then we might be waiting for a pretty long time. So we started working on things that we felt could make a difference. There was two themes to that. First of all, we started working on the things that would make our team feel safe coming back to work. And we've been able to experiment with that and implement that gradually through a process of opening some of our locations for takeout over the last few weeks. And secondly, we put together a 10-point consumer-facing plan designed to give customers some confidence that we really had thought through the challenges of them visiting a pub or a restaurant again. And also, clearly, in the same way as going to Tesco has changed, for a period of time, and we hope this period of time isn't too long, the consumer journey is going to change. So I think it's much easier for customers to get their head around that if it's been mapped out for them before they come back to a pub for the first time. So we put some work into that. There are 10 initiatives focused around, for example, ordering via contactless app, focused around table layouts, social distancing measures, focused around on-site communication with team and customers. And we spent a lot of time with our teams trying to build a very simple message for customers. And we put it out as early as we could, well in advance, clearly, of hospitality reopening, in order to start, hopefully, to spark as much conversation as possible with other operators as to how they might be able to safely and steadily get their pubs and restaurants back open.
And what has the reaction been positive to that?
It's been really awesome from consumers and from the trade in general. And last week, we launched a program called the Kickstart Collective, where we are taking 500 small independent businesses and we are giving them a series of measures, a series of support measures from BrewDog and other industry experts that have supported us on this to help them navigate their way back to reopening again. So everything from safety to some stock for reopening to some training initiatives to a relaunch and marketing plan so that, you know, the independent pub trade has been very good to us as we've grown our business over the years. And therefore, we felt that there was an opportunity for us to take some of the learnings that we've gone through over the past month or so and really kind of open source that and share it with as many independent operators as possible, because a lot of those people are scared for their businesses and their livelihoods right now.
Yeah, quite. And have you been able to reopen some overseas locations, and have there been learnings from that?
Yeah, that's been interesting. And that's another thing that we've been keen to share as openly as we can over here in the UK and in Europe. So we never closed in Sweden, so that stayed open. It's starting to warm back up again, but dropped to about 50% of revenue and is steadily moving upwards from that. We reopened Oslo after that, and that again reopened around about 50-60%. And we're now open in Germany, and we're now open in three locations that we have in Ohio in the US as well. Our general learnings are that it seems to be pretty clear that we open around about 40 to 50% of usual trading. What we're finding is that where in most of those countries, distancing is either 1 meter, a meter and a half. And there's a huge difference between a meter and 2 meters in terms of how a hospitality business can safely and profitably manage capacity. So that's something that's very important. But we're also finding from a team and consumer perspective is that once the measures are in place, it doesn't take a huge amount of policing because people take care of each other. Customers take care of team and vice versa, and customers take care of other customers. We have not had a lot of instances where consumers aren't taking care of managing physical distancing or don't abide by the rules around seating and so on and so forth. So far, we're learning that customers adapt very quickly to a slightly different customer journey.
And how long is that sustainable for if you need occupancy to be as high as 80% for for those bars to thrive?
It's not sustainable for a length of time at all. I mean, I think that for us, if we're still at 50% of capacity in 2-3 months' time, then we're in a very difficult place in terms of where those bars are from a profitability perspective. And the other thing to remember is that we're, given the size and diversity of the business, we're probably in a better place than most. The vast majority of restaurant operators have got 16 days of cash flow, and they've burned through that pretty quickly. So we have decided that it's right for us to open at 50% and try and build it to 70-80% and get the sites back to profitability. Others won't have the luxury of being able to do that, and others will feel as though they simply can't reopen at that level, or they simply can't reopen with any kind of distancing in place. So there's no pathway for hospitality to be successful moving forward with distancing in place for any length of time, it's got to be a short-term measure.
And it's very difficult to quantify. I understand that. But how big is the threat to the hospitality sector in the UK right now?
50% of hospitality businesses and you know, 2 million hospitality jobs and potentially another million or more in the hospitality supply chain just in the UK are at risk. And if we don't take care of the measures around ongoing furlough support, a resolution to the oncoming crunch and gridlock on rent via a national timeout, and an aggressive consumer confidence campaign supported by a VAT reduction, then that number is not going to change. And I think it's absolutely frightening. Our hospitality and leisure will never be the same after this, but we must fight to protect as much of it as we possibly can, because it's intrinsic to the fabric of UK society.
We'll never be the same. You think it's changed irreversibly?
Irreversibly, insofar as there are businesses now that haven't made it, and there are businesses that won't make it. And for our high streets and for hospitality in general to continue to thrive, there needs to be those interventions to try and make sure that we don't lose 50% of the hospitality sector, because if we lose 50%, then it's unrecognisable. But unfortunately, we're losing businesses day in, day out. So there's long lasting impact from this, and we'll feel that for years to come.
Okay, so it's a really stark warning. I know you've got to get on, David, but I would like to end with some advice that might help some of our listeners. And you and BrewDog are celebrated for your use of social media, and over the last week, it's perhaps got more attention than usual. At the weekend, last weekend, you were talking about new beer names, comings and goings, 260 miles, the Barnard Castle eye test. And after that celebrated tweet on their UK civil service account not so many days ago, you did offer free punk IPA and chicken wings for life in bars for the civil service employee who sent that tweet. Has anyone come forward, and what advice would you offer those listening on how to capitalise on social media positively?
Lots of people have come forward. There's been a bit of a kind of I'm Spartacus approach to it, which has been fun. And my advice is not to touch it until you clearly understand what the tone of voice of your brand is, and that you really, really understand the tone of the message that you want to get across. And for us, after that, we take great care with what we do, but we also try and have a sense of irreverence and fun about our messaging on social. And at a time over the past few days when, unfortunately, a lot of really important messages at the moment have got lost because we're talking about what happened on the road trip to Durham, we felt it was important to maybe add a little bit of that fun and irreverence to the agenda. And it went pretty crazy and hopefully brought a smile to a few people's faces along the way.
Okay, well, thank you for that. And it sounds like the free punk IPA and chicken wings for life are safe for now, at least. David, thank you for joining us, and good luck with the reopenings.
Thank you very much. Great to chat.
So a strong message for government there, and a considered one for landlords too. I'm also looking forward to trying Barnard Castle Eye Test, a hazy IPA, of course. Thanks for listening, and take care.